Welcome to episode 9 of season 2 of the pod. And today we have a friend of mine, Uber creative, Kelly Herrick.
Hi, I'm Steve Rick.
And I'm Tim Elliott.
And welcome to the RE of Marketing podcast.
A podcast where we rethink, replay and remark on all good things to do with branding and marketing. She's creative in the business sense, in the strategic sense, and a real life artist who sells paintings before she died, unlike a lot of other artists.
That's a statement and a half.
Well, they all only sell stuff after they died. This is a real life success one, right?
I quite like that. Coming from a background where I studied art, my wife went and studied art at university she's a very lauded art. There are a lot of artists who have died, but there are a lot of really good artists in this country as well. And Kelly just happens to be one of those.
She is definitely one of those. So we've got an interesting topic to speak about with her as well. She's requested creative courage, right? Which is something I'm passionate about and have done and deliver workshops on brave creative leadership. So we're super aligned anyway. So I'm really looking forward to her take on stuff because she's good.
And I'm looking forward to understanding a lot more about it. It's obviously I've seen some of the stuff that you've done, Tim, but it'd be great to listen to understand what she means by creative courage.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So without further ado, let's introduce Kelly Herrick. Kelly, do you want to say hello, introduce yourself and
hello.
Tell us what you're going to do?
Yeah, I think that'd be a good place to start. So, yeah, I'm Kelly Herrick and I've spent 20 years as a senior marketer in corporates, as creative strategist in design agencies. I am Chartered Institute of Marketing postgrad diploma and I'm an artist as well. And I'm hugely, hugely interested in the topic of creativity. And that's why I'm talking to you guys today.
It is. So the topic, the phrase of the day is creative courage, right? And we've spoken in previous episodes and previous series about creativity and the lack of it and how within our industry, right, within people like us, we've got words and phrases that due to the beauty of the English language mean a bunch of different stuff. And I think creativity and being creative is one of those. So do you have a definition for us of what creativity means to you and to your work?
I'd love to say yes, but I think creativity does mean a lot of things to a lot of people. What I get a lot is I'm not creative, because people think creativity equals being arty or being able to play the piano or being able to, you know, stand up and do Shakespeare, which is not what we're talking about today. That's a creative pursuit. So we're talking about creativity with a capital C. And I really think that creativity is just your perspective on your purpose. So creativity is a state of being, a state of mind, a state of behaviour, your perspective on your purpose, which is your why. Why are you doing something? What are you trying to achieve from doing this thing? So for me, creativity is very much about a way of being over time, a type of behavior, a type of mindset, rather than a skill like Excel or, you know, spelling or something like that. Does that make sense? I hope that makes sense.
It's great because it shows that anybody can be creative, Kelly.
You know, from
your finance person who's great in Excel, but they can be just as creative as what people often class as the people who work in creative industries.
Yeah, absolutely. There is logic to creativity. There is rigor and there is structure and technique to creativity, as well as imagination and emotion and bravery and all the kind of left and right side brain stuff. Absolutely everybody can be and is creative. I totally, totally believe that.
Yeah, I believe the same. I've come across no end of, I do some work in for leadership groups in manufacturing and engineering, and engineers are amazing, right? They create whole new things, like things that didn't exist before. But I will guarantee you, if you work into a room and ask who's creative in the room, they don't class it themselves as creative. They don't class themselves as that sort of industry. So it takes an explanation rather than a definition, or a proving to them what creative is. And I love your definition of creativity is a perspective on your purpose. I've not heard that before, but I think it's brilliant. I think it's really good because it reframes it as something, like you said, something for everybody. It makes it mean so much more, right?
Yeah, and I am creative in a totally different way to how you two are creative and vice versa. So it's very subjective. And I think what's happening now is that we're seeing big international corporations and organizations thought leadership portals like LinkedIn, they're taking creativity as a skill further and further up the ladder of desirables, and people are going, oh my goodness, how do I get to be creative, how can I make myself creative, without realizing that all they need to do is just kind of tap in to what they have already inside. They have a creative self in there. It's about getting to know it and getting to know how valuable it is versus how valuable Jack or Jones is up the road. You know, there's something for everybody.
It's hard though, isn't it, Kelly? Because when you start thinking of the education world, which I am from, it's very hard to formally assess creativity. And actually, it's really easy to say that's right or that's wrong. Whereas in creativity, there is no such thing as right and wrong. It's just one way or another. And that's it. It's a question I wrote down when you was talking around, you know, rigor and creativity, left, right, brain side, you know, right and left of the brain. Do you believe that creativity is almost not beaten out of us, because that's a strong word, but it's taken away from us, isn't it, at a young age?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's interesting because I was just, I heard John Cleese talking about his new book, and which is all about creativity, and he's doing a set of online sessions, I think from the South Bank or something like that, which you can access. And he talks very much about how in modern education, we tend to do that very thing that you've just said. We tend to kind of work it out of people, you know, we kind of get people to leave it behind. And the reasons he said, and I totally agree with him, is that you make it frightening for people to fail and negative for people to fail. And failing is a massive part of creativity because you're working stuff out the whole time. Yeah. And also you take that play element away from it. And I am a massive advocate of play. I think just doodling or you know, playing around with an idea, standing up for a meeting instead of sitting around the table, just doing something slightly different, playing and exploring is really important. And after sort of midway through primary, when you start to get ready for year 11 plus in the UK anyway, it's kind of, yeah, let's get serious, kids, let's you know, stop playing, stop failing. And that is just such a hotbed for creativity that it's a shame that it goes.
It is that whole imagination piece that leads into creativity. And I always remember a story being told to me when I first started working in education, there was a group of 5-year-olds given a paperclip, and there was a group of corporates given a paperclip, and they were asked to come up with ideas of how to use that paperclip. And the corporates came up with 4 or 5. They was like, oh, well, I can use it to attach paper, or I can open it up and I can open up the port on my iPhone type of thing. And all the kids came back with like hundreds of different ideas. They were going, it's a sword for my Barbie doll. And they were going, oh, I can poke it here and I can plant seeds into a pot and things like it just showed me that early creativity stage, when we're open to listening and understanding, and there are being no boundaries in doing anything, and how it continually funnels down as we go through different education and through later in life to a point of where we go, well, this is what's expected.
Yeah, and that is to do with courage, which is the topic for this podcast, right? So it's, you know, creative courage. And the thing that I find people are the most nervous about is judgment when they're being creative, whether that's creative in a work environment, you know, in the board meeting, or whether that's creative from a hobby or a crafts point of view or with their kids. What if it goes wrong? What if they don't like it? What if they laugh at me? What if my idea is rubbish? So that courage kind of gets eaten away so that you just do what's expected, which is exactly what you said. You stay safe, you stay within the confines of the process or the task at hand, and the creative courage is actually stepping outside of that. That flash of inspiration and that brilliant idea or that end result is not the creative part, actually. The creative part is having the courage to say, this is a status quo, I'm just gonna slide, skip, you know, whatever, shuffle, Harlem shuffle to the right over here and do something different. That's the creative courage.
Yeah, that's really good. I've just actually just before we recorded this podcast from 1 till 6, I was working with a group of leaders on who want to work more purposefully, right? So we're in a period of work where they're trying to define and understand and have the bravery to live their purpose statement. But out of the 15 people on screen who were participating in this work, I would say a good 8 to 10 said words along the line of give themselves permission, be brave enough to live a more creative life, write that book, play more trombone, do something that they just stopped doing from being a kid, right? And I think that proves what you and Steve were just chatting about there, about that, like it gets out of people. And these are like professionals with like leaders who have got very good leadership roles in their companies, right? They're very good. They're successful humans, but they're craving more creativity, right? It's the thing that's missing out of their everyday.
Yeah, it feeds the soul. And that sounds a little bit woo-woo, but it's totally true, because it is your self-expression. We all have this personal filter of our eyes, our brain, our senses, our, you know, spirit, purpose, whatever you want to call it, that we then use to put stuff back out into the world. We take it in through our filter, put it back out. And our creativity is our self-expression. And there is nothing people want more than to be seen as their authentic self. Everybody wants to be heard. Everybody wants to truly be seen, even if it's just by your parents or your partner or your, you know, whoever, not necessarily at work, but ideally at work too. And I think that we've seen such a massive trend during this crazy year of people picking things back up because they've got the time and the desire, and all of a sudden some things have stopped or postponed or halted. And they have, I speak to lots of senior level women, particularly in some sisterhood groups that I'm in, and the amount of people who are writing books, starting embroidery, learning an instrument, doing a language, all these things that they wanted to do, like you said, for so long, is just incredible. I mean, there's a reason why Hobbycraft have increased sales by, what was it, 600% or something crazy, right? That, you know, people need to express themselves. Mm. And there's a value to this for us in business and leadership and marketing.
I think I've read a similar thing actually about that relates the words play and make. I think it was a Cannes Lions Creative Live podcast where they interviewed the CMO of Lego, I want to say, who do serious play. I think they do serious play workshops in of Lego to help people make that thing. And Steve, I think they said a similar thing about your paperclip story, right? If you give the basic 32 block sets to a kid, right, they will make, I think mathematically, like 3.5 million different things they could make from it. A normal kid would make 300, but you give it to an adult, they get like 20.
They give it to an adult, they ask for the instructions.
Yeah. But I think there's a core, certainly a core, I've heard it more of the mindset of a maker, right, which is super creative, like getting that into the world, whether you call it creative problem solving or like solutions or design thinking, but that I think there's a need for people to have that new mindset, but it takes a big shift, doesn't it? Have you seen anything like that, Kelly?
Yeah, and it's great to have the structure of things like the serious play with Lego, because it's a bit like having the paperclip. Once you give somebody some tools and some limitations, or some, not limitations, but kind of rules of engagement, people can start to imagine. It's really hard sometimes to imagine with a blank piece of paper. So you get, and it starts to work, you know. But I think one of the quotes that I was given a couple of years ago and actually really resounds with me, and it really talks subconsciously, I guess, about creativity being an element of control and choice, is I am creative before I am reactive.
Nice.
So I am creative before I am reactive. And I'm sorry, I don't know who originally said it. A friend of mine, Nick Devlin, told me the quote. And what I love about that is that it kind of goes, hang on a minute, before I jump into the task, before I jump into the process, before I jump into what's expected, let me think what I want to create out of this situation. And that's more around what we're talking about, is creative thinking, problem solving, creative leadership, which is less around how to make a, you know, piece of art. And I think we are also pre-programmed to react to what the boss says, what the process is, how we've done it before, what the stats on Google Analytics say. You know, we've seen it all with banking during lockdown is a really good one. You know, there's loads of great initiatives out there for the big banks to be moving people online, particularly perhaps the older generation. They're doing lots of workshops to help people with their online skills. I have yet to hear of a C-suite executive of any banks personally phoning any customers and just seeing how they're doing and, you know, what's lockdown like. Like, I've not heard that yet.
But there's been, actually, that this week I was in a networking group. I'll give them a shout out. They're called the Purpose Collective, and they're from a load of industries, and they've done some really good sessions. But I met a guy on there this week who'd been asked by the FSA, the SFA, the Financial Services Authority, whichever version of that is correct now, but the people who regulate banks and financial services have been asked to create this thing. So they do training for bank people to, because they're going to be regulated and measured successful on how they deal with the most vulnerable customers now, in opposition to how they deal with the richest customers, right? The on the spreadsheet best customers with most savings, but they are now regulated how they deal with the most vulnerable customers. And they've been asked to put together trainings and content and ideas into the banking and finance industry of how to deal with, you know, everyday people. And I think that's, you know, I was super excited when he explained that to me, because like the amount of cool workshops and difference that would make of people, how to communicate creatively, how to listen, how to do exactly what that quote says and be creative before they react to the words that were said, before they react to the data, to be creative of how they can help, how they can make it a positive thing. It's a beautiful move.
Yeah, and it's a very human thing. So creativity is a real massive human attribute. That's why, probably not the best thing to say this year, that's why we are where we are. But, you know, creativity, I think I've mentioned this to you, you know, it's like 30, 40,000 years before we were doing agriculture, we were painting caves, right? So our creativity and self-expression is a massive part of our humanity. And I think it can be very small things as well as big things, like making a phone call versus changing a whole process or doing a big campaign. It doesn't have to be those things. And yet creative leadership, I think, is about cultivating this purpose and this kind of attitude over time, rather than perhaps 10, 20 years ago, we'd think a creative leader was somebody who walked into the board meeting and went, I've got the next best idea for the biggest campaign. that's not what we're talking about with creative leadership. Creative leadership is about cultivation of creativity and allowing it to flourish. It's a very vulnerable thing, creativity, and to sow the seeds and plant a garden where it can really flourish and grow is a massive, massive part of creative leadership for sure.
Yeah,
there's almost a steam window view of creativity, though, isn't there? That's a great example, you know, of how people view creatives from 20 years ago to what we expect today, Kelly. And it's a way of life, creativity, being able to walk in and think about changing things for the better, rather than it just being a business trend that people are jumping on. Because at the minute, it seems like there's a lot of people saying, I want creative people in my team, but I don't think they actually understand what that means.
Yeah, apart from wearing like a black polo neck and thick glasses or something like that.
I get it. Harry Potter. Yeah.
Exactly. And I think that's where this creative rigor comes in. So if we do think about a creative pursuit, say playing the piano, there are elements of technical skill and ability that you need to learn, and there are rules and ways that that thing is going to work. You know, you press a key, it makes a sound. But on top of that, once you've learned those skills, there is the emotion and the speed and the tempo and the musicality and, you know, the composition and the making of new music. And this is where both things come together. So creative rigor has to tool people up with skills and with perhaps the right mix of teams, but then it also has to have the, you know, the softer, like we said, the flourish, the cultivation elements to allow for a culture and time and space for creativity to grow and to come into being. Because at the moment it feels like people think creativity is a bought-in thing, like you said, like you can just get a creative person who says they're creative on their CV and did well in the interview, or has a creative business themselves, and get them to come in and consult for you for 6 months and you'll all be creative. You'll have some tools, but you need that culture of aligning your creative purpose with one another. And really, creativity is why. So I have, should I do my formula? I've got a formula. Should we do some maths?
Yeah.
Yeah, we love a formula. I
love a formula, but if you're really good at maths, I'll probably need brackets in this or something. So don't have a go at me, because I'm creative, you know, I don't do maths. I'm kidding. So I have this formula around creativity, that creativity is curiosity plus action times repetition. So everything you can think of that's a creative pursuit is, what would happen if I did this? Or why does that work? Or how could... So it's a curiosity. There is an element of exploration, play, all the things we've just been talking about. But in order to be creative, to have a creative output, you then need to act on that. And a lot of people will tell you that being creative, particularly with things like visual arts, it's a series of edits and decision-making. So that taking of action is a series of edits and decisions that you take based on your curiosity. What would happen if you try it? Good, bad, yeah, keep it, or no, get rid of it. And then what you have to do is just keep doing that and repeat and repeat and repeat. And that doesn't necessarily mean repeat it all exactly the same. So what happens if I mix these two colours, it gives me that blue? What happens if I mix these two colours, it gives me a darker blue? What happens if I mix these, it gives me a greener blue? Those are the things, you know, that artists and craftspeople have been doing just naturally as part of their creative lives since the word dot. And I think that the curiosity plus action times rep is something that's so simple that people forget that we've all got the capacity to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that formula is one that I was about to ask, actually. I was about bring it down to as that came around naturally. Of, I know leaders, but we all know leadership teams who have the idea in the head or the dream in the head to run a creative, get a creative culture, right? Be more creative, be a bit
bean more... Beanbags.
Beanbags, right?
Beanbags. Yeah. You'd want to slide in my office.
Do you know what? Like, to facilitate that. But I know people, I've delivered workshops to people I know that won't operationalize it. right? Won't take action, to use your formula, won't make it real. And I've love a framework of helping organizations and people who are, what do you call it, institutionalized within organizations to think kind of differently, right? I always say that creativity is a mix of freedom and specificity, right? You need the freedom to create choices and then make a good choice to test, right? So make choices, create choices, like a mix of freedom and specificity and a mix of skills and frameworks that you can give to an operational director that can create a manual of how to operationalize creativity. Because creativity is beautiful, the idea of it's beautiful, but stuff like your formula is important because it helps people make it real.
Yeah, and to be able to create on demand, which is what this economy is all about, right? So we're not talking here about starving artists in a Parisian garret who paint one masterpiece every 20 years. We're talking about modern economy, modern business, modern organizations that want creative teams to be able to consistently repeat their creative brilliance on demand. Yeah. And that needs rigor and that needs structure, because there are things that absolutely kill creative flow, like interruptions, for example. You know, you're trying to be creative and you've got to jump onto five different tasks and emails and phone calls and Zoom meetings. But things like that are part of the bedrock of creating and cultivating this creative behavior and pattern. There is a pattern and a rhythm to creativity. And that could be different from business to business, depending on your model, depending on your customer base. It could be different from team to team. You know, you might have a team of engineers that work brilliantly first thing in the morning and want to really structure it. And then you might have a team of salespeople who love to do things in the evening because they've kind of traditionally been socializing with clients or whatever. There is a rhythm and a pace, but there is definitely a rigor and a structure, I think, to helping creativity flourish.
I think that's really interesting. One of the questions I wrote down about 10 minutes ago, which it's funny how it's come back round to that, which is, do you think, Kelly, that too many creatives could cause a paralysis of decision making?
Yes, because creativity requires the edit, the action, the create choices, make choices. You know, as Tim said, he's absolutely right. And as we know, in large groups of people, that we're not always great at being able to edit and agree. You know, collaboration is great, but at some point there needs to be a point of leadership that can take something forward. And that's why understanding purpose is so important, because to be creative for the sake of creativity is just hipster and cool and, you know, Google offices and all that is just pointless.
Yeah.
But to be creative on demand, rigorously, because it's aligned to your purpose as an organization and your why, which are the same thing, I guess, that is where it's gold dust. That is where it works. And that enables the leader, leaders, leadership group, whomever in that situation, to make the edit. Two amazing ideas here. One really aligns with our why, our purpose. The other one, not so much. So the other one maybe goes back into the original formula, curiosity. What if this idea was better? What if it was different? What if there was an alternative? And you go back through it again. But you can edit, choose, lead based on creativity aligning to your purpose.
And I really like that. Reminds me of that when you say creativity for creativity's sake is pointless, right? I can't remember, ages ago I heard a quote, I think of some marketing guru or something, that says, or American business guru, that growth for growth's sake is pointless, right? You can't want to grow to just grow. Like it doesn't drive action. It doesn't inspire anybody. It doesn't give people a reason to do the work, right? If you're just growing for growth's sake. And I really love that, creativity for creativity's sake as well. I want to bring in a word actually here while we're talking about operationalizing and making creativity real. And that's the word constraints. right? I've seen the most creative work in doing bunny ear quote marks, uncreative teens, right? When they're given a, for example, a time deadline or a ridiculous budget deadline, when they have to do something with natural constraints, like it kind of removes the blockers because you have to get it done. And I think maybe that's leads to Steve's creative paralysis remark as well. Like, do constraints, like strategic constraints, like if you put them there on purpose, help teams be more creative, do you think?
Yeah, I do, because I think, you know, we've just said this with Lego, haven't we? You know, once you're given some constraints, so you can create anything you like as long as it's in a brick.
Yeah.
Look how creative people are with Lego, and it's a brick. And it's the same sort of thing. I think it's authenticity of those constraints. Again, if it's constraints that are authentic and aligned to the purpose of that project or that problem or that organization, teams generally get that. Okay, we need to make a big step forward for this charitable trust, but we don't have any money, but we need to do X, Y, and Z. That feels like an authentic constraint. If it's just, you need to come up with an idea for this, the CEO hasn't got any money because he spent it all on a golf trip, that feels like, it feels like a punishment. So a constraint can feel like an opportunity, or it can feel like a punishment and a limitation. And framing constraints to teams, to creative teams, as opportunities is a massive part of getting people to react creatively to it. So, you know, creating a 3D picture of a building in 2D paint on a canvas is a massive constraint. But think of all the amazing art there is in the world, because exactly, you know, been trying to use that opportunity to create something wonderful. So I think constraints are really healthy if they feel authentic, if they feel aligned to the right reasons, and if they're delivered as opportunities.
So do you believe that it's possibly a good thing in any team or any organisation, Kelly, to have different varying levels of creative and creativity? So the one that keeps coming back to mind to me at the moment is Tesla with Elon Musk. Elon Musk is crazy as hell quite often, but he's very creative. You know, he is going, I am going to get us to Mars, and I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do that, and I'm going to make an underground tunnel under LA and all these different things. But then it starts to filter down through the organizational level, where people are going, okay, if that's the grand ambition, if that's, it's not the purpose of the company, but if that's the purpose of what we're trying to do for this project, then these are now the constraints that we've got to work within, but we will make it happen.
Yeah, and I think there's two things that come out of that. First of all, we're kind of talking about creativity as a skill and a behaviour and a mindset tonight, today, whenever you listen to this podcast. Major mistake on a podcast, don't say what time of day you're recording it. So, yes, so we're talking about it as a mindset and as a kind of attribute, whereas I think when we think about Elon Musk being a creative, we're thinking about personality type.
Yes.
And the two things are slightly different. So absolutely, in an organization, in a family group, in a friendship group, whatever, to have too many creative personality types or too many, you know, rigorous, structured personality types, it never works. We've got all the bulb in team roles and all the stuff that's been done on that in the past. So you need a good mix of people. So I get that. But having a grand plan, I think, allows people to be creative within their skill set. So asking somebody who can't play the piano to be really creative and perform a concerto is just going to terrorize them and make them so frightened of judgment, which will shut down all their creativity. However, if that person is a wonderful carpenter and the stool is broke, asking them to create a new stool to go with the piano so that somebody can then play it and it looks beautiful will make their creativity flourish. So I think creative leadership that has a grand goal, scheme, vision, and allows people to be creative within their sort of natural habitat works really well. Because although you have to feel uncomfortable, you have to get outside the comfort zone a little bit to be creative, I think throwing people, you know, in a cold, deep pond and saying be creative will just get everybody to clam up.
Yeah, completely.
Yeah, I think that's really a good point. So I want to change tack a little bit, actually. We've all had experience or backgrounds in marketing, for example, right? And as that word is in the title of this podcast, I just want to change tack and look at creativity in marketing, right? So yeah. I went to the Festival of Marketing in 2019 at Tobacco Dock, back when we were allowed thousands of people in the same building. Long time ago, that. But there was a theme. So it's on for, I think, 2-3 days. I can't really remember. There was a lot of wine. But no matter what talk I went to see, what whoever was speaking on the stage, there was like an underlying kind of moral of every story, of every talk. And that was around either the lack of bravery or the lack of creativity within the sector, right, within the industry that's meant to be the most creative, were either because of it being kind of easy to do marketing stuff. There's an app for everything, right? It's easy to be efficient at marketing. It's easy to put stuff into the world. Marketing, take some marketing actions, right? And there's a bunch of, me and Steve have talked about this before on the season one of the podcast, I think, of defining roles of marketers, and some marketers and some freelancers and some agencies do their job based on the amount of stuff they do, not the impact of the stuff, right? And I think impact is related to creativity. I think within marketing, the creativity adds the value to the action. And just as a fellow senior marketer and background in marketing, I wondered what your take on creativity in the industry is at the moment.
Yeah, I think creativity forced upon us. You know, you change the whole world, and creativity is then, you know, it's a mandatory thing. The world is not the same as it was. And I think that you're right, that there's so many tools, there's so many platforms, there's so many pieces of software. From the beginning of my career, which was much more about above the line marketing and about captivating creative and big ideas, I can see how over the last 20 odd years, it's kind of funneled down into using multiple platforms really well, reporting on the stats, showing the ROI, and proving to the board, the boss, whomever, that marketing works. And I think in a way, it's a kind of backlash against the sort of 60s, 70s, 80s culture, perhaps in the creative industries of, you know, you know half of your marketing budget works, but you just don't know which half. And I think there was a backlash against that kind of wasted Mad Men style creative feeling to marketing. And it's probably swung far too far the opposite way. It's like a pendulum, you know, it kind of steadies down as the pendulum gets slower and slower. But I think that having more tools and more efficiency is brilliant, because it allows us more time and more headspace to be creative.
Yeah.
But this is where the bravery and the courage comes in, because I'm not sure that marketing leaders and business leaders are allowing that time to be repurposed. So when we come back to curiosity plus action times repetition, there's a block in each of these phases. So curiosity needs time and space to ponder, to wonder, to ask so what, to ask why, to debate, to argue a bit. And if what we do is take time we've gained by being efficient from all these software platforms to increase the amount of software platforms or to increase the amount of tasks, we're not actually reusing that time. We're reacting before we're creating. We're not saying as marketing leaders, right, we're so much more efficient as a team. What I want to do is spend more downtime each week really thinking about X, Y, and Z. What we're doing is saying, great, we're so much more efficient, do some more of it. And that's a problem, I think.
I've seen, I don't don't know. I don't do much marketing for people anymore, so I'm not on the coal face. But from the people I talk to in the industry, or maybe in charge of agencies or stuff, that you mentioned the good old days or the bad old days, the olden days of the Mad Men era, you know, that with where people had one billboard to tell their story to the world, right? When creative mattered, because you had to get people to look at that billboard to understand your message. There seems to be a movement about my small circle of people to bring that level of creativity back, or at least the principles behind it. So like having a strong proposition or slogan, which it's Steve's world. Steve is a proposition geek. And I like, you know, although I love design, although terrible at it, absolutely terrible. Not even very good at Canva. But it's the
everybody's good at Canva.
No, I'm not. I'm not. But it's the move back to that, right? To produce work you're proud of, right? That you can put in a portfolio. Because a lot of marketing nowadays isn't portfolio worthy, right?
Well, there's just so much that we need to fill, right? There's just so much content that needs to be created. There's so many minutes, there's so many messages, there's so many images. We must have more, we must have more, we must have more. And this is kind of that bigger, better, faster, more mentality that I think is quite dangerous, because Todd Henry talks about this quite a lot. I don't know if you know him. He's the author, an American creative, and he wrote The Accidental Creative, which is a really great book. People jump into the how and the what far, far too soon in the process. And I think marketing and marketing leadership, in a way, has become entranced and obsessed with what are we doing, what's everybody doing, and how are we doing it? Are we doing it efficiently? Are we doing it cost effectively? How are we doing it? What are we doing? And before you even get a whiff of the how or the what, we should all be really, really clear about the why. Why are we doing this? What's the concept? What's the big idea? And I think because we've potentially thrown out a little bit of the big concept, big ideas sort of feel that the olden days of design and marketing had, we've kind of thrown the baby out with the bathwater a bit, and we've become over processed. And I think what we need to do is every so often, even if you're a busy marketing team, is just stop a minute. You know, it's so automated, you've got time, just stop a minute and really say, like, so what? Right, this email that's going out to our 5 million subscribers doesn't go out today. So what? What would be the alternative? What would be the alternative? And I think that's the problem. We're not really focused on our why, which comes back to purpose, doesn't it, I guess, before we jump into the how and the what.
I think you make a really good point there, Kelly, which, you know, I wholeheartedly agree with. I think those that actually look at their how and their what don't actually know their why. And I think that's why marketing has got quite a bad name amongst a lot of organizations. You know, there's a lot of organizations where I've worked in where they've gone, well, marketing are a load of rubbish, or marketing don't know what they're doing, or that type of mentality. And it's because they're not promoting themselves what their why is, and why marketing is there, and what it's trying to achieve, on top of what the why of that organization is trying to achieve. And they're just doing stuff. And that is always the scariest thing with marketing, is you just end up doing stuff rather than doing good stuff.
Yeah, because you're desperately trying to prove yourself. I've been in these meetings. I've been, even as on the senior management team in front of the board, you know, I've been there trying to prove my worth and the budget and get next year's budget and talk about, you know, with the sales director, have that ongoing argument about why he shouldn't have another salesperson and I should have more marketing budget, all those kind of things. I've been there a million times. And I think the problem is that we're so, we want to prove ourselves and we want to succeed as a marketing culture so much that we're trying to do something of everything. And that we talked about earlier. So coming back to curiosity plus action times repetition, the action part is the edit. It's doing something. It's being empowered to make a decision. It's making a decision, and it's editing and making choices. And actually what we're not so great at is doing that consistently and from a focus point of view. We try things for maybe 6 months or a quarter or a 90 day, that is a quarter. Told you I didn't do maths. a 90 day, you know, and then we go, oh no, next thing. Or we go to Festival of Marketing or one of the other great events and there's a new shiny tool and we kind of want to play with every different thing that we can. And the people who do consistently well are people who have been consistent.
Very true.
We've spoken a lot on this podcast. Like, stuff keeps coming up, doesn't it, Steve? Like purpose.
Purpose comes up in everything. Every episode we have done since the beginning of season one to now, you know.
No matter what.
Episode 9 of season 2, purpose has come up in every episode.
No matter what, it's rained as. And continual improvement, right? Having that mindset of continual improvement has come up in most episodes, right? No matter what topic or rambling subject we're talking about at the moment, the need for the continual improvement mindset or having that edit button or that action stage in your formula, right, is, it just seems to be, no matter which super smart person we talk to, a thing that matters.
Yeah, it's the repetition.
Yeah.
You know, you can't move forward by taking one step and stopping or then sidestepping and then going backwards. You know, in its most basic format, if you have to walk a mile, you have to walk enough steps to walk a mile. And what we're not great at doing is doing that consistently. We kind of go off on a ramble into the bushes and up the hill and back to the shop and whatever it is we're doing. And I think repetition is where you get that rhythm and understanding. That's where the culture comes from, because people then learn from that. They build on it, they expand and explore. And then there's a kind of benchmark and a culture where they can take it up a notch or take it sideways. But without it in the first place, without kind of basic repetition and consistency, it kind of all dissolves. And I think that's where people think creativity is, this big, amazing idea. Oh, don't worry, guys. I know we've missed our targets this year, but I've got a game changer. You know, what's that? Paradigm shift or all those awful things that people say. You know, actually, maybe it's just about being your most creative self in your daily practice, in your daily tasks and daily job, aligned to our purpose that you can be. Could you imagine an organization where everybody was their ultimate creative self, aligned with one purpose and why of a business, and had the culture to be able to be that person every day consistently?
That's the holy grail, right? That's the thing we're all searching for.
Yeah. Unbeatable, happy, brilliant, well, changing the world, ethically great, making money, prosperous, just everything we all want all of our companies and organizations to be, right? That is it. That's the holy grail.
So if we've got leaders listening to this podcast, what can I do to help start that journey? If that's the utopia to get to, how can I start that journey now? If they're sitting there listening going, yeah, we need to be more creative. I'd love to have more creative people. I'd love to have that scenario of being able to move to that next stage. What can I do to do it?
One of the first things I say to people, whether I'm talking about creative strategist in a business point of view or from my art practice and teaching people how to be artistically creative, is don't do anything else at first. Just notice how creative you really are. Because people don't take the time to notice themselves or their teams. Like, I would like to have more creative people on my team, is something you just said. They've probably got, well, they'll definitely have in every person a super creative person inside there, all with different skills and attributes for sure, but still creative people. And I think what people aren't good at is just taking the time, creativity, who's creative in what capacity, how much creative resource they do have, and where the challenges and the blocks are and where the opportunities are. You know, it's that old adage, isn't it, of like you're starting off on a journey on the top of a hill to the second hill in the distance. You've got to be able to see how you're going to get there. And what we do is we go, how can I buy in creativity? How can I put beanbags in, or, you know, get a blackboard wall or whatever it is? And actually, first of all, we've got to really just notice and give ourselves space and time to think. So that curious needs time and space. You know, Michelangelo didn't just produce the stuff that he produced because he was bored one day and he was like, oh, what should I do next? I've made an omelette. Let me, you know, draw an amazing mechanical object that nobody will think of for another few hundred years. He was curious and he was obsessive and he freed up his time so that he could be curious. So I would suggest that that is a really good starting point. And also to really understand what we're talking about here in this podcast, creativity, and what does that mean for you? What does it look like? It's not a one size fits all. It's not a people with felt tip pens having big ideas. So understand what creativity looks like and really take the time to be curious and see what you already have inside your team, yourself, your organization. I would say start there. And that would take a lot of time and effort to do that properly.
Yeah, brilliant, brilliant. I think that's on that bombshell. We're at a good place to end it. So Kelly, if you want to let people know where they can best get hold of you and check your work out as an artist, because as a customer of yours, you know, it's worth doing, people. Let people know how they can get hold of you, Dan.
Yeah, so if you're interested in me from a sort of business point of view, then obviously I'm on LinkedIn, as are we all. So I think it's you'll just find me with Kelly Herrick. It's a Kelly with a Y and Herrick, H-E-R-R-I-C-K. So find me on there, link in with me, start a conversation. I would love to talk to you about this because, as you can tell, I'm very passionate about it. And then if you want to follow me on Instagram or Facebook, it's at I Am Kelly Herrick, which will find me, and kellyherrick.com will find my art practice. Don't do Twitter. Feel like it's, you know, thousands of people shouting at me and I'm in the middle of an auditorium. So decided to edit that out of my life about 3 years ago. Do start a conversation with me. And if you don't want to start a conversation with me, start a conversation with yourselves about this, because when the AI winter, nuclear winter comes, people, creativity is what's going to save everybody. So go for it.
Preach. I agree. Thank you very much, Kelly.
Thank you. Been a pleasure. Loved it. See you guys.
Yes.
Well, that was Kelly.
It was.
Creative courage. It's a big, big subject. Do you know what? It's something that I've heard people talk about. It's things, something you've referenced to time and time again through Brave, etc. But she has got some ideas in how to get the best creativity from people.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, just to if you need to look at the show notes and skip back to relevant times, right? The formula for creativity, well, I've tried to formularize creativity before, and not as nicely as curiosity plus action times repetition. I think that's. It's kind of foolproof. It's great. But my favorite bit was vied for by 2 points, and that's creative rigor. The use of the word rigor in terms of creativity, like persistence, like work, right, is something good. But I think the real genius bit, and the bit I've not heard, right, in all my books and studies and podcasts, is the link between creativity and purpose that she made.
If you go back to every episode of this podcast from season one, show one, through to this 9th episode, so what are we? We're touching on 16, 17 episodes now.
Yep.
Every single one of them has got purpose at the core element to it. And for this to be very aligned to it, it blew me away. And the bit that really got me from the educational piece that Kelly and I started to discuss there, she said one sentence, which it did take me aghast a little bit. And I don't know why I've never really realized it before, but that creativity is a human attribute. It means a lot, you know. That is something that we are allowed to have. It's something that we've got. We choose to utilize it or not. And when you think about it, there's only humans and probably animals that have creativity in trying to survive and trying to live. And yet some of us decide to switch that off. And that just doesn't sit right with me. We should all be more creative in what we're trying to achieve. So, yeah, brilliant. Kelly was absolutely brilliant guest.
Yeah, she ended with that statement as well, in the AI winter that's coming and will only leave room.
Yeah, that made me very excited.
We'll
have to do an AI episode at some point.
Yeah, we will, actually. I do know a couple of futurists, so maybe that can be a thing. But, you know, to be Ooh. Faced with a future of our value as humans, our work to be inherently creative across all of those definitions, is an exciting time. And I urge you to take away creativity is a perspective on your purpose as something to chew on before next episode, because that I certainly will, because that's really good.
Yeah.
Really good. Right. Really good. So that's the end of season two.
Yeah, we're done.
Oh my God.
We're splitting up for the winter.
Season two is done and dusted. Please let us know in your comments, because comments is good. Tell your friends about us. Tell us about your favourite topic or episode, because we're here to do another season. We're going to definitely do it. So we want to give you stuff that you're interested in. But I thank you for listening so far, because we've loved it.
Absolutely loved it. This is my favourite part of the week. My absolute favourite part of the week is getting to sit down and chew the fat over marketing, either just with Tim or with guests coming on. So let us know what you want season three to be like. We've got a few ideas. We're probably going to do it. But unless you can change our mind. So let us know exactly what you'd like us to do.
Brilliant. On that note, have a lovely winter. See you later.
Yeah, winter is coming.